Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Paul Lawrence, a partner at PricewaterhouseCoopers, and tonight's conversation is with Dr. Thomas Garthwaite, Acting Undersecretary for Health, the Veterans Health Administration. And joining me is another PwC partner, Greg Grieben. We were just closing out the last segment talking about the new initiatives and changes. Want to continue?
Right. In addition to the barcoding, we've had to do a variety of other things. From computerized patient record to pain is the fifth vital sign to implementing reasonable charges in our billing system. I know the latter one has been especially challenging because we have no culture for billing. So we've had to train coders. We've had to train clinicians to document in the chart. We've had to train others to make sure the codes are correct and justified by that documentation, then to get the bills out, to make sure they're collected, all that. All that process is pretty hard when you start really from ground zero.
What do you think the major challenges that VHA will face going forward?
Well, I often see more challenges ahead than others because I've been fighting the current challenges and have a sense of those. Clearly, the emergence of technology. And how to use it, how to deploy it, how to pay for it, how to kind of get over the hump from the old technology, the new technology safely and efficiently and effectively is certainly a challenge. And that's both computers, but also fancy diagnostic machinery and fancy therapeutic machinery and new medications and genetic testing and all of those sort of things. I see huge issues in workforce. From challenges to competition for workers with the wonderful economy that we're experiencing, finding people that want to go into healthcare and nursing and a variety of the professions in healthcare has been challenging. It also has that competition for workers has an upward pressure on pay. All of the government workers have been noted to be getting older and being closing in on retirement, so there's some very special issues related to the federal government and the retirement systems and the age of the average government worker, and that's even worse in VA for nurses. Some real issues in workforce for us. We have huge infrastructure issues. We have a lot more buildings than we need, but it is not a simple process to talk about closing those, and it's not a cheap issue to think about how to take them down and how to restructure our infrastructure to meet the needs of today's veterans. There are clearly some veteran demographic issues in the future. Around 2010, there's a significant drop-off in the number of veterans in the United States, and we anticipate a drop-off in the need for medical care by veterans. So one has to either imagine a different or emerging role for the VA healthcare system or significant changes in its size and scope. Our sense is that it's been a real investment for the taxpayer to build this large system. It provides some valuable functions in addition to providing the health care and its research and education missions, and that there are potential other roles that will provide taxpayer value on their investment. The good news is by reinventing and transforming the VA, I think the potential roles that the VA could take on in the future have expanded. I mean, I think 5 years ago, one wouldn't look to a large lumbering bureaucracy that couldn't demonstrate the quality of care that it gives for any new tasks. But today, I think you have a much leaner VA that's very responsive, that's high technology, that's high touch, that can demonstrate to anybody who wants to look the kind of quality of care we're capable of providing. We're having trouble finding systems out there that have benchmark performance measures as good as ours. So I think that we have the potential of really being a model system and one that also provides valuable service in research and education.
When you change the way you do business, there tends to be resistance. How have you dealt with this, and what advice would you give other leaders of change?
Well, not sure how well we've done in overcoming resistance. I would say for sure we've seen resistance. Clearly, our strategy has revolved around the traditional things, such as communication, where one tries to convince people that the change is for good reason, that to share the successes frequently, often, and to try to maintain an upbeat attitude about why the change is necessary. I think we've done that reasonably well, but I think that we still have a significant amount of resistance. The unique aspect to the VA is that we've changed dramatically at a time when healthcare is changing dramatically as well. And part of our strategy has been to remind folks within the VA to talk to their colleagues in other healthcare systems to understand that it isn't all just VA changing, but all of healthcare is undergoing dramatic change. Most recently, we're really trying to arm our employees with some information about the quality measures that have changed so dramatically. And so we've given all our employees a little folding card that essentially tells them the key positives about the transformation that we've used to sell the improvement in quality. The fun part about that, I think, though, is that we did that, and the Veterans Canteen Service, who operates all our cafeterias across the system, saw that and said, hey, that's a great idea. So they made tray liners that have that on, and they printed like 4 million tray liners. So that, you know, sometimes when you're sitting back, you have an idea, you never know how it's going to be taken by other parts of the organization and operationalized. But I think what the important point is that you got to give people a reason to change. You have to make sure that they understand the importance of that change and that it makes sense to them. I think, by and large, what we've tried to make changes in has made sense. We've tried to say, you know, everyone should get immunized. Why aren't they? Everyone should get these medications. Why don't they? Patients should feel that we're compassionate and courteous. Why don't they? And how do we get better at that over time? And if you define those goals carefully, I think most people get on board with them if they see the same vision. And I think if you keep it focused on the patient, they usually do.
How about advice for the people working in the organization, for the managers or leaders of the future in terms of dealing with this new environment?
Well, again, I would just go back to a very simple premise. You know, I think in a previous presidential election, I think the phrase, it's the economy, stupid, was used. And I tell people, it's the patient, stupid. If you're really focused in on the patient, if you're worried about their waiting times, and if you're worried about our communication with them, if you design systems that make sense to the patient, then you're going in the right direction. And whereas if you just say, well, we have to preserve this old structure that we've had for so many years because my goal in life was to be the assistant chief of that structure, that's not the same as saying, you know, it doesn't matter what my title is, as long as the patients don't have to wait in line, that they are treated with courtesy and respect, that they get the proper diagnosis and proper treatment. That's what we're really about as an organization. We're not about creating management structures and titles that people aspire to. We're about creating outcomes that patients care about. One of my favorite analogies is that when you fly in an airplane, you may not crash. You may get from one point to another, but your satisfaction may not be perfect all the time. And you can imagine what the executives must be measuring in certain airlines versus others. There's one that I used to fly often, and where the CEO of the organization knew how long from docking the aircraft at the jetway until the bags appeared on the carousel. Now, that's different than knowing whether or not you had empty seats, because you and I know that if you had empty seats, we're happier. The CEO's not happier. We also know that because empty seats mean we're sitting in the middle, whereas if you and I also can probably predict which airlines actually know and measure how long it takes the carousel to get there, because we're standing down there for half an hour waiting for our bags to appear, and the airline that I know measures that, you don't wait. So the real issue is, how do all of our employees really believe, measure things, and try to make those change that are important to the patient? So it's not so important to the patient whether or not the person above you in the hierarchy thinks you're a good person and that you wrote a nice report. They do care if they wait. They do care if they're treated with courtesy. They do care if they get the right medications. They do care about their visit to the medical center. That's what you have to be focused on, always.
Well, I think that's a good point to end on. Greg and I want to thank you for spending so much time with us this evening, Dr. Garfley. Thanks for joining us. This has been the Business of Government Hour. To learn more about the endowment's programs and to obtain copies of the two reports on the VHA, Transforming Government and Transatlantic Experiences Health Reform, visit us on the web at endowment.pwcglobal.com. See you next week.